Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hey everyone, Mark from Guitar Nerds here. This week on the Guitar Nerds podcast, we are joined by Japanese resident Matt Knight, former and, well, still current, I guess, Guitar Nerds contributor. He joins us live from Japan to talk about his trip, the work that he's doing, and all the regular news. And over on this week's Patreon episode, we answer your questions from the Facebook group. There's topics on everything from make gooder pedals right through to our first guitar. If you want to hear it, it's half an hour long and it's over at patreon.com/guitar nerds. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this morning by Jay Cross.
Hello.
Joe Branton.
Oh.
And a very special guest. Some of you may know him as former Guitar Nerds member slash commentator coming live via the power of the internet, Matthew Knight.
Hello. Good evening for me. Just good early evening.
It's obviously Matt's coming from Japan. Time difference means we're recording really early on Sunday morning, so we might not be as fresh as we could be. And Matt, you're recording. What time is it there? Like 6:30?
Past six.
6:30.
Oh, so, no, The Simpsons is on.
Oh no, Matt, you're missing out on The Simpsons. That is one of my favourite things to do whenever I go to a foreign country, is find The Simpsons on TV and check the
watch
dub.
The dub version.
It's like German Homer is incredible. Yeah, always funny.
I've actually turned the TV off here because, I need to plug in my amp and a load of other stuff, and also, too, Japanese TV is rubbish.
Yeah, it's quite weird, isn't it?
There's four channels, and there's nothing ever interesting on. There's no, like, documentaries or anything that you can put subtitles on, and always for every program there's someone else in the corner just filming their reaction to whatever's happening on the TV. So it's like they're making a TV program, then they show another program within that, and then they film the person watching that program.
So everything is Gogglebox.
Yeah, it's live Gogglebox basically.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's very weird, like trying to watch. There's so many, you know, here you turn on the TV and you get one picture, usually. I mean, there's some channels that obviously have text and stuff, but, you know, you get, like, the thing that you're watching, whereas Japanese TV, there'll be, like, text run along the bottom, text down the sides, picture in picture of someone watching the thing that you're watching, then they might fly in something else. It's bonkers.
Yeah, there's so much text. They love putting text on everything.
Yeah. So, Matt, obviously we've not heard from you for, what, 3 weeks on the regular pod?
It's 4 weeks. 4 weeks since I recorded the last one.
Yeah. How have things been going?
It's been, I can't believe, I'm in my fourth week here. It's already been a month. It's gone so unbelievably quick. I thought I'd be sitting around sort of like twiddling my thumbs going, God, I'm really bored and there's nothing to do. But actually, because I'm going to work during the week and doing my normal job, it just feels like, you know, the days are going by, and the weekends have been pretty good. Most Friday nights I'm out in town,
man about town. And,
yeah, I mean, there's 100 bars here. Joe Branton would have a field day.
Joe's next holiday destination. Well, I don't know why you're not commenting on this.
Well, yeah, there's nothing more to say.
Well,
yes,
I guess
yes.
We've summed it up. So what have they got you actually doing? Are you just basically doing your regular job, but in a different office?
Yeah. and helping them translate.
Okay. So are you working on stuff for Japan, or are you literally just doing what you would normally?
I'm doing my normal.
Right, you're doing your normal gig, but you're doing it.
Basically.
What, 4,000 miles away? 5,000 miles away?
5,500 kilometers, I think.
So you're like
5,500 miles, actually.
So
soon to be 9 hours ahead because the clock's changing. 2 weeks, so
they go forward, right? Full forward, spring back.
But the thing is, I've set up the world clock on my phone, so whenever I need to talk to people, I can be like, oh, just make sure I don't text anyone too early or too late. And then when you put in LA, which is where our other office is, and they're 16 hours behind, you're like, man.
That's one of the things. One of the things in my job is that obviously I have to like phone, you know, China and Japan and the States, and it all kind of makes sense from the UK because we're kind of.
I didn't know Stag had anything going on in the States.
They've got the stuff all around the world, and it, you know, it can be a bit awkward. You have to have like 8 o'clock meetings in the morning so that we can speak to China and Japan, and maybe stay late after work to talk to the States. But yeah, imagine if you're like in America and you've got an office in Japan. Like, how do you sync up that meeting with the
I guess it's just you go the other way, and the meeting then the people in the US have to do it late, and the people in Japan have to do it early. With my job, we work quite closely with our teams in Japan and in the United States, and it's just, it is impossible to get everybody on the call at the same time. You can't make it work unless somebody is up at like 4 o'clock in the morning somewhere, and it's just it's really interesting how these, and it's something that I find really, really cool being part of like a global business and seeing how it all works and how these mini struggles that you just don't really anticipate.
Matt, we obviously you've been doing your full tour diaries over on Patreon, but if we could just get a quick overview of the key points, obviously weirdest thing that you've eaten, guitar gear that you've seen, and some sort of drunken anecdote.
Okay, well, I can tie drunk in with weird food.
Okay, go on.
So I think I text you guys a picture, and I think I mentioned it in the tour diary for people who aren't Patreon subscribers. So they obviously like, they do what they call a drinking party. So every Friday or Saturday is a drinking party, which is where you basically all meet up and drink, basically, to the point of absolute excess. And they were like, oh, we'll go to this one place. It's a chain, but every chain in every city has like a local dish, and like, you can try this. And I was like, yeah, because after 2 weeks, I was like, if I'm hungry and something's put in front of me, I just got to eat it because I've got no other choice but to just go, just don't ask, I'm just going to have to eat it. So we sat down, they're like, oh, we can try this. It's local to Hamamatsu. So anytime people come over from anywhere in Japan, we'll order this. And what turns up is this bowl. And I'm like pretty drunk at this point. What turns up is this bowl of clear mini fish. And they're like, oh, it's like raw whitebait. I'm like, why is it raw? And they're like, I don't know. Like, we don't eat it very often, but like, it's like a gift. And I was like so hungry, and I was like, I'm just gonna have to eat this fish. So I was like, they were like, do I get it with my chopsticks or the spoon? They were like, oh, you can use the spoon. So I like spooned this on there. Like, oh, make sure you like dip some of this extra sauce on it. Just ate it, and it was just like, there was nothing to like chew. It was just these bits of raw fish that just tasted incredibly bitter. And I was just like,
they just slide straight
disgusting.
Down.
And they're all looking at me at the same time, going, you know, looking at me like, oh, what do you think? And I'm like, well, to be honest, don't really like it. And then they all laughed and went, nor do we.
Totally set you up with a gag food.
One guy I go out with, he eats everything, including like he's really good to have, because he'll look at the menu and he'll be honest. He'll be like, okay, yeah, so that's like raw this and that's raw that and that's raw horse. Like, man. And I'm like, is there anything you don't eat? And he's like, no, I eat anything. Like, even like this one bit of the crab that like smells like feces, and even Japanese diners don't like it, but I love it. I'm like, you are mental. Like, he'll just eat absolutely anything.
I'd do a bit of raw horse, I reckon. I'd go for a bit of raw horse just to try it.
How do you, how is it? Is it what, like in a sandwich? Is it like a slice?
Like a sandwich. It's like Billy Bear meat.
It's just like, I don't know.
Which
don't
bit of the horse is it?
Everything. I'm just what I'm amazed is the over here, it's like for what, you know, meat eaters are used to in England, like you used to like the main parts of an animal. Over there, they're like, oh, don't worry about those bits. We'll have all the other bits.
Yeah.
I went to a shopping centre and we were like, oh, let's have lunch. And there was like six beef restaurants. And I was like, oh, great, you know, like beef. And they were like, well, this one is tongue. I was like, okay. And then they were like, that one is also tongue. And this one is tongue. And I'm like, are they all tongue? And he went, yeah. Like, where's the rest of it? Where is the rest of it? And then we found one that wasn't. And then I was like, oh, that looks great. And it was just like a mound of roast beef. And I was like, oh, it looks great. And then they were like, yeah. And then what we do is you just crack a raw egg on top. I'm like, is the egg raw?
Yes.
Just, and they're like, it tastes better. And I'm like, I just, no. We went somewhere last night and the guy just ordered this bowl of food. And I was like, what is it? And he went, I'm not going to tell you. And I was like, I'm so pissed and so hungry. I'm just going to have to eat this thing. And it was like, so disgusting. I don't even know what it was.
I love it. I love that you're throwing yourself into it, Matty. Like, and I also love the fact that the restaurants are so specific. Like, oh yeah, this is beef, but it's only tongue.
The beef tongue restaurant.
Like, where would you go here? That was like, yeah, no, it's beef, but it's only, you know, this part. Like, surely there's, you know, you have a steak or you have a, you know, this dish or this dish. No, just tongue.
The thing is, I was trying to. So a couple of friends from the UK got married and they're on their honeymoon in Japan and they visited for 2 days, but they're both vegetarian and one's actually just gone vegan. And I was like trying to explain to the Japanese guys like vegan. They were like, oh, right. No, so no meat. I was like, yeah, yeah. They were like, oh, well, you know, maybe they could have like ramen. I'm like, they can't because the noodles have got egg in. They went, no egg? And they went, maybe impossible in Japan. And when I came over, I said, have you done this? Like, I've just had to eat fish. He's like, they've been like, we've had no choice. It's literally impossible to order anything vegan.
I would
vegetarian, you can just get by, but vegan, it's like, it's difficult.
I'd imagine in Tokyo, someone set up like a cool vegan restaurant.
Oh, in Tokyo.
Must be.
Oh,
but yeah, when you're out in like Hamamatsu or something, I'd imagine you'd struggle a little bit.
When you're out in the countryside. But yeah. it's just weird because here they don't really sit down for like a main meal. They'll sit down for like a small plate and everyone will share. So you don't really like order your own plate of food. You order stuff for the table and then everyone just kind of shares, which actually is kind of a nicer way to do it. But it's just adjusting to the sheer amount of booze that you tend to get through in one evening. It's just like, yeah, maybe only once a week. Because you can just go to a supermarket, you know, like a 7-Eleven, and they'll have three fridges full of booze.
Yeah.
And some of it's like 11, 12%. And you're just like, yeah. And you can drink in the street. Just walk down the street, just having a big old can of special brew, Japanese special brew. And everyone's like, well, that's just what he does.
I forgot what I was going to say now. You've thrown me off by the idea of you drinking special brew walking through the streets of Hamamatsu.
Not me.
So should we have a quick talk about the guitar shops? I know you've talked about it more on your Patreon tour diary. So what's the kind of music shop vibe in Hamamatsu? What cool stuff have you seen? And more importantly, have you bought?
What have I bought? There's only one really... There's two main music shops. One is a bit more of a chain and it's kind of... does a bit of everything and there's not really much. They're just a Fender dealer, so they just have the standard Fender line.
Yeah.
But there's another music shop called Sonics and they do a load of cool secondhand stuff and Japanese brands that I've like never heard of, and just a load of weird like custom stuff. I managed to snap a couple photos, so I'll put them up. But their main thing is Nagoya, which is the town about an hour and a half from here, has 11 music shops.
Yeah.
And everyone is completely different. And guitar shops in Japan are just absolutely mind-blowing. Because they don't have any crime, no one steals anything, they can put everything on display, like in the street. And all the displays that I hated when I, you know, worked in a shop, like ones that you press a button and like the screen comes, everything has those. Like even a pedal will have like a little screen and it'll be like a video about the product and it'll just turn on when you walk past it. But they'll have like... they'll have walls that will just be parts and they'll go from capacitors that are 50p to like leads that are like 300 quid that you can just like help yourself to on the wall.
Yeah.
I'm like, people not. And they're like, no, no crime. So why would anyone steal it? What would they? So the shops here are just done. Everything's super clean. And it's just the sheer amount of stuff that's just incredibly well looked after. Like, secondhand stuff doesn't look like beaten up, like, stuff that you would find in the UK. And we went to one store, and they had just a wall of secondhand parts casters, like all Warmoth builds, that probably cost like £2,000 new for like £300-400.
It's the stuff you've been sending over. That's the thing I've been most shocked about. The prices of everything. It seems so cheap.
Yeah. I mean, some of the stuff that I've seen, the Gibsons are about the same sort of price. I think they're like standard across the board.
Yeah.
But they do Gibsons like nothing I've ever seen. Because I remember from going to the factory, they were like, oh, the Gibson reps over like once a month to the custom shop factory to spec stuff up. So like, it's the huge range of that stuff. And you still get the Fender stuff, but you get loads of Fender models that you don't see. But it's all the other brands, like all the other just Japan exclusive brands. And actually, I found out, and I don't think I text you guys this, the Tokai factory is apparently in Hamamatsu.
Oh, right. Wow.
So I might try and go to the Tokai factory.
Do it. Get some photos for us. That'd be awesome.
But yeah, loads of Tokai here. But the biggest brand, I think, is ESP.
Yeah.
And I'm still confused because they have ESP, they have Navigator, and then they have Edwards, which all come under the same brand.
Yeah,
but Edwards have made their way over here a little bit.
Yeah, I forget which shop it was. One of the shops in the UK really went heavy on Edwards, and they were like, okay, yeah, we're the only people basically in Europe that stock the Edwards stuff. And I just think it didn't really work because...
For listeners who haven't seen them, Edwards are basically the same thing as LTD.
But they also... I mean, it is the same company, but they do, like, weirder stuff. Like, they do a lot of signature models under the Edwards brand. Like,
They do the baby metal signature.
Yeah, yeah. And they do... the guy that was in Billy No Mates, and I forget the guy's name. It's basically, like, a Les Paul where the finish is, like, a Hawaiian shirt. Like a blue and white Hawaiian shirt pattern on this Les Paul, and it looks absolutely incredible. But you could
Billy No Mates the snuff band.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They had a Japanese guitarist whose name escapes me. It's really, really annoying. But yeah, that was incredible. It was an incredible looking Les Paul, but you couldn't get it in Europe because surprisingly, the one shop who did Edwards in Europe didn't want to bring in the Hawaiian shirt Les Paul, but look, yeah, it looks so good.
Is the is the E in ESP Edward? Is it someone's name?
No, I found out what it is the other day. It's Electrical Sound Products.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh right,
okay. I had no idea that's what ESP stood for until I saw it printed in massive letters in this.
That makes sense.
In this shop called
Big Boss.
I'm
sure we've spoken about that before because the name comes from. Because it was an American company first, and because it started as a custom shop and like spares company for like capacitors and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah. So there's plenty of ESP kicking around. So do you want to tell us about some of the stuff that you've purchased? And I want to tell you about something I need you to purchase for me.
Okay. So I have purchased.
It's just for the listeners, we're watching Matt on Skype. But he's just pulled out his phone, which indicates to me. He's looking at a long list. The fact that you can't remember off the top of your head and you've had to pull your phone out to look at a shopping list of things you've already bought.
So I went to this one shop called Effector Freak, which was just secondhand effects pedals.
Wasn't that
it
your...
had five Klons.
Wasn't that your...
Five Klons. Sorry? Five Klons.
They had five vintage Klons for sale, yeah.
As in the Centaur, not KTRs or anything.
No, the Centaur, the original one, but they had five different variants.
That's ridiculous.
Just in one cabinet, I was like, that is mental.
How much?
They're about £1,600 over here.
Right.
They're £1,600, yeah, in Japan, which is pretty expensive. That's one of the things that's more expensive in Japan than it is anywhere else. I mean, the crazy thing is obviously because they're a Japanese company. Boss stuff is so ridiculously cheap here. Mm-hmm. I saw a CS2 for a tenner the other day. I bought an MXR Custom Shop Variphase, which was the Phase 90 in the switchless WAR format.
Yeah.
Which I remember being, I think, new, 150 or 170 quid.
Okay.
Is it spring loaded or is it just a standard?
It's the spring loaded one.
Okay, fine.
I think I paid 40 quid for that.
Ridiculous.
Like a mint condition minus the box.
Yeah, but why? Why would you buy
it? It's actually a great sounding pedal. I was like, if I don't like it, I'll just sell it. It's like, Double money. I bought a vintage 1978 DS1 for £25.
Oh my god!
You can't. You probably can't buy a second-hand new DS1 for £25.
Well, the funny thing was, is I went to this second-hand store. Hard Off is the name of the second-hand. Hard Off. That's the name of the kind of chain of second-hand stores here that have like a musical department. This one was cheaper than a modern second-hand DS1.
So weird.
Like,
well, yeah, because it's older, so, like, it's not worth as much, you know.
Yeah, but I was like, that's 100 to 150 quid's worth with the box. I was like, brilliant. I bought an FZ2, which was the first thing I was actually looking for, which is the Hyper Fuzz, the analog Boss Fuzz that came out in the 90s. I bought an RPS-10, which is their digital pitch shifter delay rack unit, which was the inspiration for the Earthquaker devices Rainbow Machine.
Yeah.
So it does a load of weird sounds. And I also got sent a pedal to review from Medor Electronics in Australia, who we did their fuzz for Guitar Nerds a couple of months ago. He was like, oh, I'll just send it to you while you're in Japan because it's easier.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
I've got a modded metal zone called the Fuzz Zone.
Yes.
Are you going to be allowed to review that?
Yeah.
Sure, it'd be fine.
It doesn't even sound like a metal zone.
Yeah.
Basically just a completely redesigned unit. So, yeah, I've got a bunch of stuff. I've just got to work out how to get it out. And I finally, after years of asking and always joking, I finally got a Boss Engineers outfit.
Yes.
The silver jacket with the pink and black stripe. And they were like, oh, we've only got one size left. And I was like, oh, okay. And it's like, it's 5XL. And I put it on. And I was like, it's not actually that big. And I'm just like, because their sizes are so skewed here, I was like, ah, okay. So I'm basically like a triple XL here, like as standard. So yeah, I've got a load of stuff. Just got to work out how to send it all back.
Are you going to send it back? Are you going to try and bring it back with you?
No, what he's going to do is Amy's going to come over with her suitcase, empty and then suitcase. Matt is going to, but just before she leaves, he's going to be like, right, sorry, you can't take any of your stuff back with you. You need to leave this suitcase here for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. And one podcast listener has sent me some money to buy him a guitar as well. So I'm actually going to Tokyo at the end of the month to go guitar shopping for one of the podcast listeners
as
well.
That is some real trust there.
I was actually going to ask you to pick me up a couple of things as well, but we'll talk about that off air.
Blimey. So talking about picking up things, Matt, can you get me a Super Famicom Classic Mini?
Ah, the one of the new ones.
Yeah, because you cannot get them for love nor money. Well, you can pay money for them, but people are charging. So the retail is like 80 quid. People are charging like 160 for new ones.
Are they sold out now, are they?
They're all sold out. So yeah, if you could get me one, that would be fantastic.
I know it's moving away from guitar slightly, but retro video games consoles here are so unbelievably cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a shame that they just won't play any English games. Like, you can buy a brand new boxed Super Famicom for like 50 quid.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
like, seeped.
It's,
and you get all the
bonkers.
Crazy console colours here as well. Like, all the console colours that don't come out in Europe and stuff. I'm like, if I could buy a bunch of this and take it back, it's easy money.
Definitely. Like the N64 in like transparent slime or something. Did you ever seen that? Like the transparent green, neon green. Looks so good.
I had a Pikachu N64 for a while. It was amazing. I bought it for no money and it was fantastic. And then I ended up selling it.
For no money.
Also for no money. And now they go for a bloody ton.
Yeah.
Oh, there's one. I actually saw one for sale for like £30.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go then.
So I'll buy that one for you, but you can only pay the Japanese version of every N64.
That's fine. Pokemon's a Japanese game, so it should work. It's not really how it works, I know.
No. So if you can get me a Super Famicom Classic Mini, that would be fantastic, and I will pay you when you get back.
Sure.
So if you want to hear more about Matt's Japanese adventures, we're actually doing a kind of I think it's weekly at the moment, isn't it? A weekly series.
It is every week.
Matt in Japan over on the Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where Matt basically talks about his week, all the stuff that he's seen, basically what we've done now, but in a kind of solo but longer format, going into details about bars and food and computer games and occasionally some guitar stuff. It's worth checking out. I have not yet listened to this week's episode, but I'm sure it's as good as the first two. Shall we talk about some other things that we've been doing? Because I realise we're nearly halfway through this podcast.
Oh, man.
And, you know, Japan stuff's cool and that, but there's other things that are
there
happening.
There is, yeah.
Joe Branton, you had a celebrity appearance in your store this week. Gus G.
That's right, yes. Gus G from legendary band Firewind. I don't know who that is either. But he was also he was also hand-selected to be Ozzy Osbourne's guitarist recently, although he isn't anymore.
Well, Ozzy Osbourne stopped doing gigs, didn't he?
Well, yeah, whatever, yeah, that sort of thing. So, yeah, so we had... he recently jumped ship. Well, actually, it was at NAMM 2016, so slightly old news. But Gus G is a crazy good sort of shredder guitarist, jumped ship from ESP, where he had his signature star guitar made. He moved to Jackson. And in 2016, they released their own version of the star guitar, which was actually more correct because the star shape that he uses is owned by Charvel. So ESP would have been paying a license to use it in the first place.
Okay.
So it's cool. So he's now got these pretty rad Gus G Star.
Is it like that cheap market clothing, like G-Star Raw?
Well, yeah, he does. He basically has an X and a JS series version of the guitar. So it's like a £400 version and an £800 version, which is pretty cool. They're both like, they come in satin white and satin black. The differences are sort of as you expect. The cheaper one's poplar, the more expensive one's mahogany. Jackson owned pickups in the cheaper one, and then he's got his own signature Seymour Duncan, I think the Seymour Duncan. Yeah, he's got his own signature sort of Gus G Seymour Duncan passive humbuckers in the more expensive one, and it's kind of following the trend of like where a lot of shredder guitarists are going now. So they're all like, it's passive pickups and it's like a hardtail.
Yeah.
So kind of losing all that, even though he is quite a hair metal-y sort of leather waistcoaty, leather trousers style fella.
Did he have leather trousers on?
No, just like just jeans.
Okay.
You know, but yeah, it was cool to have him down. So he came down, talked a little bit about like his approach to guitar playing and you know, and shredded out on some of his guitars. But it was interesting to hear his kind of insight into what he does, because he, despite being a very, very cheesy guitarist, actually the stuff that he listens to, his inspiration and what he likes about guitars, if you can take away the fact that it's a star-shaped guitar, everything's quite traditional about what he's into. And and so yeah, that was super cool. But it's kind of a guitar that I've never really looked at much, just because it is so hair metal. Like the guitar is,
it's very pointy,
unabashedly, yeah, very Kiss. But it was a great guitar and he was a great player, so yeah, that was super cool.
Talking about not so much great players, I would say he's not known for his playing, but I went to a Yamaha event this week for the launch of the new Billy Corgan signature acoustic, and it was not only the launch of his signature acoustic, it was also the launch of his album OG La La, and the accompanying film. So yeah, this was,
I didn't know about this.
Indeed, yeah. So
a
this
film as well.
Indeed. So this was an event organised by Yamaha where basically we went to something called the LSA in London. I think it's London School of Arts, something like that, London Society of Arts, which is like an exhibition space basically. And yeah, so sat down and were shown this film of Billy Corgan doing a small bit of acting, but it's more about this like weird story thing. I think it was called like The Pepper Pot, I think is the title of the film, which uses basically some of the music from OG La La and tells this kind of fanciful dreamlike story. And it was kind of cool because it was the album launch. There were people like Daniel P. Carter I was sat next to, and you know, people from the kind of rock world were there to do that side of stuff. But then there was also the launch of this guitar as well. But the main highlight of the evening was that Billy Corgan was there and was doing, did a session basically, and he kind of did a bit of an interview with one of the fellas from, I want to say, one of the mags, like Rock Sound or something like that. Oh no, maybe he was a, no, he was a DJ. I can't remember the dude's name. And so we learned a little bit about the guitar, and he was talking about, oh, firstly, we learned a bit about the album, why it's called OG Lala, and the kind of thoughts behind it and what went into the film, because the film is kind of quite weird, I guess. Kind of, it's like a hero, classic hero's, mythological hero's journey type thing. And uses a lot of kind of stop motion and like animated bits as well to fill in the story. So we talked about that, but then he talked about the guitar, and he was talking about why Yamaha, and he talked about a few of the other brands that he's used before on stage, and he said that acoustic has always been really difficult for him because it's difficult to get an acoustic that stands up to kind of touring, and it's difficult to get one that actually sounds decent when you just plug it in, you know, with the piezo. And also he said that a lot of acoustic manufacturers weren't really willing to kind of do what he wanted, which is essentially a traditional looking guitar, but something that's very like modern sounding and had kind of modern-ish features, or, you know, not really modern, but specific features. And so what he said was Yamaha came to him a few years ago and gave him a guitar for touring, and instantly, as we all know with Yamaha stuff, is, you know, just super solid and kind of does the job, basically, without doing anything too fancy. I think that's how we can generally sum up Yamaha products, you know, whether it's their synths or their drum kits or the guitars, you know, they just are rock solid and they get the job done. You're always getting fantastic value for money with them without them spending too much money, I guess, on flourishes or anything overly fancy. And that, and then he's worked with them on this signature guitar, which I think is called... I think it's just called the Billy Corgan signature. Joe, you might want to just quickly find what it's actually called. And so it's a basic kind of like concert model guitar with nothing fancy on it. There's not even like a kind of, you know, not a fancy rosette or anything. There's a real subtle kind of signature touch on the headstock. It's like an O with the line through it, which I think is Billy Corgan's signature kind of
symbol.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. And the only thing really that he's changed is that it's got brass bridge pins. Which
oh,
I guess,
weird.
Indeed, yeah, which I guess, yeah, will change the tone slightly because it's still, you know, where the strings are anchored to. But mainly they just looked really solid. I guess if you're touring and you need to change strings and stuff, you don't want to risk having a kind of
a plastic breakout. Or
yeah,
something.
Exactly. Yeah. That one that, you know, might get stuck in the bridge. And so, yeah, basically, yeah, he sat down and talked about the guitar and then played it. And honestly, it was absolutely fantastic. This space that he was in, you know, didn't have a concert PA in it. It had just like a small rig. In fact, I think it was like a little Yamaha rig that they'd brought in. And the guitar sounded wicked. So yeah, and then he did this session. He played a few songs from the new album, but then obviously he was like, in fact, before we started, he said, yeah, I was going to play for half an hour and I was just going to play the songs from the new album, but, you know, I've got time. I'll play for an hour. And then he did like half an hour of the new songs and then half an hour of the classics. So we had, yeah, like Tonight Tonight and 1979. And yeah, just some kind of Smashing Pumpkins bangers, basically. And what came across was, actually, I kind of thought he was going to be a bit of a, like, a bit of a bell. But actually, total nice guy. Like, I don't agree with some of his more recent political views, and he did stray down that path occasionally.
Oh, no.
When he was talking, he, you know, he's, I don't know if he's like a Trump fan or whatever, and I don't really want to get into that, but he was, you know, talked about liberals, which not great. Yeah. But apart from that, he was, you know, he was a, like a super nice guy, and really kind of showed some, he talked about like working with this director for the film, and talked about their kind of their working relationship, talked about his family a bit, which is something I didn't know anything about, but mainly it talked about the relationship with Yamaha and kind of like how they've looked after him, and talked about how he wanted to make a signature model that was still, you know, built to their real high high standard, but still vaguely affordable for your average player. So I think it's about, what, 1,200 quid, something like that?
Yeah, that's right.
Which, I mean, is a lot of money,
yeah.
But to get, you know, a signature model that has been made for the artist, And I think it's made in Japan. Again, you might want to just look that up, Joe.
I think those brass bridge print, brass bridge pins is a really interesting little.
I don't think I've ever seen it before.
I was trying to think of that at all, and it makes complete sense because you know the strings are brass. Well, they're not brass, but they're bronze, and they. You would expect them to react well to that sort of. Mm-hmm. You want that resonance, and it's the same thing that we talk about when we talk about, for example, a Telecaster. You know, a Telecaster sounds. I think a Telecaster sounds better when it's got those brass saddles because you get that extra resonance from them.
Yeah,
and I think it's interesting that nobody's ever gone down that route with brass bridge pins before.
I'm sure
on a major model. That certainly not that I can think of.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't find out if it's made in Japan, but I imagine it is, as it has the it's part of the L series and it has the ARE treatment,
the
acoustic resonance enhancement, which I think is something they only do out of Japan because it's the treatment they use on their pianos and, of course, the Billy Sheehan's.
Which is they do it through vibration, don't they? Something like that.
I think it's heat vibration.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, they make the wood seem old by like faking like 40 years worth of playing,
right, okay.
And 40 years worth of being a guitar, basically. Yeah. So yeah, and again, the guitar sounded great. And if if people are looking for a kind of stage acoustic, there's not too much kind of Billy Corgan stuff on it. Like I said, there's like this little. Zero with a kind of line through it on the headstock, but you wouldn't if you didn't know what that was, you wouldn't know that was, if that makes sense.
Did you get to talk to him about wrestling at all?
Did he bring it up? I did not. I did wear a Four Horsemen t-shirt and I was in the front, so I was hoping he'd spot it and be like, "Yes, you know what it's all about." But yeah, I wanted to talk to him about the NWA, which is what he currently owns.
Yeah.
But yeah, no chance, unfortunately. I really wanted to do an interview with him, but yeah, there just wasn't time, and I think he...
Wait, he owns the NWA?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which at the moment is not too much of a big thing, but he's looking to make it a big thing. So... yeah, so that was super cool. Like I said, wanted to get interviewing, but I think he had like interviews with Radio 1 and stuff lined up. So we're just a small fish in that pond.
Letting those lesser industries have a little pop.
Really letting the small guys, have a go. So talking about interviews, one last thing I wanted to talk about before we move on to news is just how much content there is in the last few weeks or in the last week or so. And just in case you've missed any of it, basically. So since... last Friday, when we had Joe's GitCon video, you've had that GitCon video, Matt's tour diary, the regular podcast with Mikey Demas, the Patreon podcast with Mikey Demas. How many GitCon interviews did you do? Four or five?
Yeah, something like that.
Around five. Plus your interview with Nick Reinhardt, which is on YouTube. And Matt's Tour Diary, episode 3. So, yeah, there's been a whole lot of stuff. And if you missed anything, I put together, like, a comprehensive list on the Facebook group. And you can go there, and there's links to everything. And there's a lot of free stuff, and there's some extra Patreon stuff there as well. So lots of Guitar Nerd stuff.
If you're wondering why Joe Branton has been a little bit quiet so far in this podcast, it's because he's actually editing an interview right now, something else that's going to go out. That's he's been up all night, he's got the shakes, I've just fed him his second coffee, and he's finishing off an interview with somebody else.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Got to make them deadlines.
That is true. Also, Mark hasn't produced any content for Gitanas for about 3 weeks now.
What so are you talking about?
Just me.
Every day, mate. Every day. How many Bloody Marys did you have yesterday?
About six.
Right, good. Yeah. There we go. Shall we dive headfirst into a big old barrel of...
New...
That's the best one you've ever done.
You are sounding a little bit deeper than right. usual.
Yeah. Sorry.
Long weekend.
It has been a long weekend.
Talking about sad news, this week we lost one of the kind of a very old amp manufacturer. Matt Knight, do you want to tell us about it?
Indeed, yeah. So the people at Carvin Audio have announced that after 71 years of business, they are finally closing down. So most people, or like most younger players, will probably know Carvin because of the legacy amps, which are the Steve Vai signature. And also, I did a little bit of research because on the podcast, we've talked a lot about Kiesel guitars the last kind of like 12 months and how they're kind of really like smashing it at the moment. Like their Facebook is just one of the best places for guitars right now. And Kiesel Guitars is actually like a separate company formed from Carvin. So they're actually formed by the same people. But in 2015, Kiesel went, right, we're going to open, we'll do our own factory. We'll call it Kiesel Guitars to name after the Lowell Kiesel who formed it. And Carvin Audio will still be its own thing. And now they're finally, they're sort of announced that we're basically, they're closing it down with no kind of real reason behind it. But they've done everything from guitar pedals to PAs to various amps to power amps to PA, you know, like PA power amps, tons of accessories, road cases, which if you live in the States is all on a liquidation sale right now, 20% off.
Almost everything's gone by this point.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah. So that's it. Yeah, Carvin have obviously decided to close, and I guess they're primarily focusing on the guitar side of the business. I mean, I don't know how their business structure actually works with Kiesel Guitars and whether they actually bought the rights themselves or it's, I mean, it's all part of the same family, so they haven't really explained anywhere in writing what the kind of difference is, but they will no longer be making amplifiers. So I guess Steve Vai's going, oh, what am I going to do?
Well, I'm sure someone else will step in at that point. Or
I'm
just
sure everyone has phoned him in the last like week going, so, need new amplifier, do you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wonder if this just really speaks to the kind of state of the market at the moment in that, you know, a company that was producing big, powerful amplifiers is no longer doing so, and their side business or their other business producing custom shop boutique metal guitars is thriving.
It's not just metal guitars.
Sure, okay, or modern guitars then.
I think Carvin really hit their peak in the 80s though, because they were a mail order only company at that point. So they were basically, you could only order Carvin through the adverts, but they had everyone using Carvin at that point. All the main kind of shredder guitarists were using Carvin, and they did a load of custom amplifier stuff at that point. And I think because they've never really found any place in any stores in the UK, or really Europe for that matter, I think they've probably really struggled. And like you say, because they're making quite big amplifiers and the tone is very specific on a lot of the Carvin amps, it is really that kind of metal, 80s metal shredder guitar tone, which I don't think many people are after.
I also think that the Carvin Kiesel guitar side of things has really modernized. Like then they're not just making shredder guitars or metal guitars, they're making great modern guitars. They're making extended range stuff. They're doing interesting new things with like you know, with like satin finishes or with neon finishes, and they offer a level of custom shop that no one else offers at the price point they offer. They've really found a niche, whereas the amplifiers, they still kind of look the same. They look very much like those sort of 80s rack mount metal grill fronted cabinets. Like there's nothing, and I don't think that's the direction that amps have moved in. Amps have become very traditional again, even you know, even stuff like PV making tweed covered amps, or even if you look at the profiler amp, the Kemper profiling amp, it's not especially modern looking. It's kind of like, you know, with the little sort of leather strap on the top, it's kind of trad.
They
just didn't move the amp stuff in the same direction.
I mean, I like I said, I think it speaks to a wider market. You know, who these days wants to get a, you know, 100 watt four channel amp when you, like you say, you could just get a Kemper, or you know, you get an Axe-FX. But people still want, or seemingly these days, people want custom modern guitars. So, yeah, maybe they've just gone, look, let's shift our focus over to the thing that's working away from the thing that's not working.
So, Matty, you said that there's going to be, or we're in the midst of a bit of a fire sale with regards to the factory. Do you know if they're selling off all of the machinery and stuff like that as well? Or
no, I don't think so. I think it's just all of the...
just all the... the amps that they've got in stock.
Yeah, I don't think they're even making amps in the factory anymore. I'm pretty sure they were probably just like designing there and then having everything made in China. I think, I don't remember them being, all their amps being American built.
I just wonder if
they're quite pricey though. I'd be surprised if they're not built there.
No, maybe. I mean, I just too late now.
I wonder if we might see some Kiesel amps coming out now. You know, maybe the focus has shifted so much over to the Kiesel brand that they
potentially
that they just start producing amps under the Kiesel brand rather than the Carvin brand.
Maybe. Talking about the machinery, one of my favourite things was when PV UK disbanded, and they were selling not only all the stock for quite a cheap price, but they were also selling, like, do you want to buy this forklift?
Yeah, the warehouse fittings and stuff like that.
Do you want to buy this filing cabinet with a PV sticker on it? It's like, yes, I do. Let's talk about something a little more positive, some brand new signature models from Epiphone. Matt, I think you've got the details on these as well.
I do indeed. It looks like Epiphone obviously bought an excess of white paint because they were like, oh, man, we've got so much white paint. What do we do? Better call up some artists and make some signature guitars. No, actually, these guitars are awesome, but they all happen to be in almost exactly the same colour. So three brand new signature models. The Tommy Thayer White Lightning Explorer. We talked about the Les Paul actually not that long ago, and it actually comes in like a pearlescent, like white sparkle finish that goes between white and pink. It's the coolest looking Explorer I think I've ever seen, with a pair of Seymour Duncan humbuckers in it as well, and some Grover machine heads. So that is an awesome looking guitar. They've also got the new Matt Heafy Snowfall Les Paul 6 and 7 string, which come fitted with EMGs, in white EMGs with chrome hardware and a completely gloss white finish. I'm glad they didn't go for gold, because sometimes white and gold does look a bit strange, like it does on the Bjorn. I can never pronounce this guy, Bjorn Gelotti.
Well, you missed out a real essential thing about the Kiss signature model.
Go on.
The fretboard is white.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But
I thought they didn't. They know?
The fretboard on the one I'm looking at is.
Oh, sorry, it's the Matt Heafy. I didn't mean the Kiss one. I meant the Trivium one. Sorry.
Didn't they? I'm sure they released another Tommy Thayer signature before that was white as well.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
What was the difference between the two?
It was
a Les Paul, not an Explorer.
Oh, gotcha. Sorry, I'm getting confused because I'm looking at the picture of the Matt Heafy.
Heafy is all white.
Yeah. No, that's
super cool. Do you think Tommy Thayer's gone, well, hang on a sec, how come Bring Me the Horizon, geezer?
He's got one of everything.
He's got all of these. Why can't I have one of everything? I reckon we'll get an SG next, because he ain't got one of them, has he? Lee Malia, that's his name, isn't it?
Lee Malia does have an SG?
No, he's got the RD, the Explorer, and the Les Paul.
Exactly, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the Airstreamer.
Yeah.
The Lee Malia Airstreamer.
No, I'm really excited for the Tommy Thayer Reverse Flying V.
Yeah, that's the one that I'm... or, do you remember the Holy V, which was just the outline of a Flying V, but it had no body, basically. It just had holes in it. Yeah, we should get that.
That was when Gibson were doing Guitar of the Week, weren't they?
That was
so
mad.
For 1 year, they did Guitar of the Week, different custom guitar.
Yeah, I actually... I was away this week working in France, and I was... talking with someone from the US who I was working with, and he was really excited to hear that I worked, you know, in the MI industry. And he said, "Oh yeah," he showed me a picture, and in one of the rooms in this house, he's got two of the Flying V's from the Guitar of the Week.
Really?
Yeah. One was a reverse Flying V, which is what made me think of it. In fact, I think they might have both been reverse Flying V's, and he just had them on his either side of his chimney breast.
Amazing.
In his front room. It looked absolutely fantastic. He was like, "You know what they are?" And I was like, "Yes, mate." And he was like, "Yeah."
Was this someone who didn't work in MI?
Yeah, that's right.
Just like someone who
just was into guitars.
Collected cool guitars. Yeah. Two reverse Flying V's.
Yeah, it was bonkers.
Blimey. So, Matt, tell us about the Bjorn Gelott.
Bjorn Gelott from In Flames.
Oh, yeah.
If I remember rightly. Yeah. So this is his second signature in what they call Bone White. But gold hardware, active EMGs, gold EMGs, gold tailpiece and machine heads, and a gold truss rod cover. Don't know if that's just too much.
Too much gold.
Some people really like it though. You know, it's the same as, I mean, this is a bit more blingy, but I personally never really got on with white Les Paul Customs, you know, the Alpine white Les Paul Customs with gold hardware, or even the wine red Les Paul Custom with gold hardware.
I think the white is acceptable, the red not acceptable. Yeah.
It just seems a little bit, I don't know, it's just a bit much, but it's some people really like it.
Yeah,
I actually think the Matt Heafy looks all right.
Okay,
the six string Matt Heafy, like, I'm kind of like, actually that's just all right.
There's no gold hardware, is there? That's the difference.
No. Yeah. Is it maple neck?
I don't think it matters when you've got that much lacquer on it.
Well, I wonder if they've gone with that as a, because if I remember correctly, the previous ones were rosewood. They weren't ebony, were they? They were.
Yeah.
Well, according to the spec, they say, let's have a look here. So, based on Les Paul Custom Alpine White EMG active pickup, 6 or 7 string with a phenolic
fingerboard.
Fingerboard.
Okay.
Which is finding all sorts of ways to get around CITES now.
Well,
aren't we?
Indeed. Yeah. Let's talk about a brand new pickup from Bare Knuckle, the Ragnarok. Jay, you got the deets?
Yeah. So the Ragnarok is it has been produced with Misha Mansour and Adam Nolly Get Good, who is in Periphery.
That's not a name.
That's what it says. It says Adam Nolly Get Good. Get Good is a great last name.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's from Periphery, and Bare Knuckle have created this. It's a extremely aggressive but devastatingly tight ceramic humbucker. Looks really nice. I mean, it's Bare Knuckle. I don't think anybody here has ever had a negative experience with Bare Knuckle.
No.
So yeah, I'm sure that this is going to be something to throw the cat amongst the pigeons with regards to the more aggressive sound of the market.
Joe Branton, you'll probably know this. The previous Misha Mansour models from Jackson, active or passive pickups?
I think they're passive.
Okay.
Because
I think
passive.
That's kind of the
Juggernaut, which is the other pickup they make.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Oh, well, that's a Bare Knuckle pickup as well.
That is the trend, isn't it? I do think people are moving away from EMGs, even with regards to that sound, which is kind of the sort of sound that you would think is very very active dependent. You can get it with high output passive pickups, and who really wants a battery in their guitar?
Yeah, do you think
a lot of people are moving to the Fluence pickups now? Tosin Abasi's just got those signature Fluence pickups.
Yeah,
circuit board ones.
What's the deal with Fluence pickups? I don't know anything about them.
They're a magnet surrounded by stacked circuit boards, so they can basically program the output of the pickup. But they're super clean,
but active.
But they're active, but they run on a lithium-ion battery that's fitted into the backplate of the guitar.
So you like
and
plug
charge it
in
with a micro USB.
Yeah.
Weird.
That's weird. The fact that you can't even take it out Like, obviously, with a, you know, a regular EMG, like, active circuit, if your battery runs out midway through the gig, you can just pop another little 9-volt in there. You're not going to stop the gig and, hang on, oh, I need to find my USB charger.
I think more stuff is moving towards that, like USB charge pickups and things.
Well, yeah, but it just seems awkward, yeah, you know.
I guess so.
Which is maybe why everyone else is going, I'll just put something passive in there that's high output and do that instead.
I wonder if... Well, the other thing that I was going to say is, with regards to lithium-ion, there's some very weird travel restrictions with lithium-ion batteries. So I wonder if that will have any repercussions with regards to touring in the future.
I've been dealing with this recently. You have to have a handling certificate to ship or travel with. Not travel with, actually. So he might be right if he's touring.
Right.
But if you're shipping substantial amounts of goods with lithium-ion batteries,
it has to be over a certain quantity.
Okay, I've just found it, actually. So this says spare, so uninstalled lithium-ion and lithium metal batteries must be carried in carry-on baggage only.
Yeah.
When a carry-on bag is checked at the gate or at plane side, all spare lithium batteries must be removed from the bag and kept with the passenger in the aircraft cabin. So, by the sounds of things, as long as it's installed in something, you're fine.
Exactly.
But if you've got a spare one, you need to put it in your pocket.
Basically, airlines are really worried about the batteries catching on fire.
Yeah.
Which is why they advise you to take it in carry-on, because I'd imagine it's easier to deal with that than in the cargo area of the plane. It's probably quite difficult to deal with that sort of fire.
Just going back to what we were talking about there with regards to people moving away from active pickups to more passive pickups, I wonder if that's to do with the fact that more of these sort of metal or modern guitarists in general are using modeling amps and profiling amps and Axe effects rather than use, you know, and so the kind of the processing and the compression can be done on that side as opposed to at source with the guitar.
I imagine so. I guess the guitar's becoming, you need less gimmicks for it. It's the conduit for everything else. Or
I think also these players are just becoming a little more subtle with how they're playing. You know, you look at someone like what's his name? I've forgotten his name. The Ibanez player with the ridiculous signature model.
Paul Gilbert.
No. More recent, like, 8-string model. Why can I not think of his name?
Tosin
Abasi. Like, his
playing... We literally were just talking about him.
Yeah, his playing is a lot more subtle than, you know, someone like, I don't know, for example, you know, a metal player of the past that's just, like, chugging away.
Zach Wilde.
Right. Zach Wilde's got some kind of tasteful bits as well. But, yeah, it's rather than just that raw power... There is also some more subtle stuff going on as well. Maybe it's because playing's moving in that direction. EMGs tend to flatten out the sound a bit, and maybe that's actually not what you want. Maybe you want something that's got a bit of a more organic dynamics to it. Let's talk about one last thing before we wrap up. Moore have announced the GE200.
Now, this is actually genuinely completely exciting news.
Okay.
So we saw this the other day when I was at work and just sort of on an American news thing, and like immediately contacted them to find out when we could list it. Now, it's not officially announced yet. So, it's not for sale yet. So there are speculation on price at the moment only. But Moore have thrown their hat into the modeling amp foot controller market, which is wicked. I can't believe how this company can consistently keep making great products.
So we're talking like Helix and FX8.
It's a Helix competitor.
Okay,
which is great because, of course, you know, that's exactly what they've done with all of their pedals. All their pedals lack the sort of original inspiration, but are great. Always great. Affordable alternatives in smaller housings. That's sort of the whole ethic behind the company. And in this case, the GE200 is what will potentially be a $300, I think it's in dollars, they speculated.
This says 230 quid. Right, 250 euro, sorry.
250 quid alternative to the Helix, which I am extremely excited about. Now, it is much more simple. So it's just a three-button setup. So it's like, you're flicking up and down between presets rather than being able to, to have sort of 8 or so foot switches. But comes with, you know, the volume pedal that you'd expect. A decent sized full color screen where you can see the pedals that you've set up currently, and this can be expanded upon, and I don't think Moore are going anywhere, so I think this possibly will get firmware updates and things. So 55 amp models, 26 speaker cab sims, 70 effects, and a 50 second looper with half speed reverb and a drum machine with 40 patterns. And
see, I'm always, when you throw that in,
yeah, I know,
I'm
the
always,
drum machine's a bit. Always,
yeah, okay, so yeah, this is hitting all the spots, you know, like a lot of amp modelling, brilliant, you know, cab modelling, effects, so they're going down a real professional sort of, you know, people recording in their homes, like high quality interface, and there's a drum machine, and instantly I'm like,
you can practice on it too, that's cool. Anyway, it also has USB connectivity, so it comes with its own software that, which will allow you to design your presets there. But my goodness, like with the market moving more towards this, like, you know, come on, like 5 years ago, none of us four would have taken like a modeling foot controller seriously. But
no.
I think on the whole, we've all had really good things to say about the Line 6 Helix, and
yeah.
I think the market has moved in that direction. It is getting better. People are being able to do more than just like ludicrous metal on these. It's not just about scooping out all your mids anymore. Foot controllers actually are offering loads and loads of great sounds and presets digitally. And the only thing that's holding a lot of people back is the fact that you've got a foot, £1,000 for a Helix, £2,000 for a Kemper, you know, £800 for the
Headrush.
Yeah, exactly. So this is great. If Moore can pull this off, if this sounds half decent, I mean, okay, like one of the things that's really appealing about Helix is the fact that you can select through loads and loads of different, like you've got those, however many it is, 8 foot switches. That's
yep.
great. But you know what? If you're using like an ES8 or an ES5 or an MS3, you design your songs to work around when you've got to switch up through the presets. And I think people are getting more used to being very organized with their pedal boards. And if you can be bothered to do that, then I think for £250, obviously we have to wait and see what this sounds like.
Yeah.
But if it's anything like all of their other mini pedals, which have all been great, they've been consistently high quality mini versions of other popular pedals, I think this could be a great product.
I mean, not just the mini pedals, though. I mean, the last 6 months or so, we've seen the Red Truck come out.
Red Truck is great.
Which, I mean, I haven't seen myself, but I've watched a couple of videos on it, and it looks and sounds fantastic. And then also the, what's his name? Devin Townsend, the Ocean Machine.
Yeah, the Ocean Machine.
You know, another extremely high-powered processing unit. This is only the GE200 there is only a hop, step, and a jump away from those sorts of things. So
I think the other thing also, this looks really well made as well. It's like a sort of a die-cast aluminium chassis, but it looks
solid.
Yeah, it looks great.
One thing to mention, there was some other news this week that I completely forgot. The second version of the Tender Octava is now available.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's the one that they weren't allowed to make.
Yeah.
They got it for one reason or another.
Yeah.
Sorry, I mean, they decided not to make any more for no apparent reason.
Yeah, so, the new one is available now, apparently. So,
oh, I'm excited.
Yeah.
I have to check it out.
New features as well. I think
really?
It's got like a swell feature. Yeah, so it's got like a slow gear kind of auto swell in it as well.
So you can swell in an octave.
That sounds great.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. And with that, we are up at time, so we should wrap things up. But we are going to go over to the Patreon episode and talk about, well, probably some more Japan stuff, loads of questions from the Facebook group, and there's some boss news to talk about. Yeah, lots of stuff, basically, because we talked about Matt's journey in the first half an hour of this episode. We haven't actually covered most of the stuff we wanted to cover, so we'll do that over in the Patreon episode. patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $5 a month gets you access to all of the extra half an hour's worth of content we do every week, plus you get access to some exclusive interviews, the Branton's Rant On mini series, of which series 2 is coming soon. I know we've talked about this a few times, but it's we have to keep pushing back the recording, but before the end of the year, definitely. Also, obviously, very topical, Matt's Japanese tour diary every week as well. 3 episodes so far, but shooting for one every week, so probably 11 or 12 weeks worth of stuff. And also, you could, if you're feeling very fancy, you could go to the $10 tier, where you get your name read out on the regular episode, like these people have.
Derek Rich, Chris Gunners, Andy Joyce, Steve Merkel, Blair, Tom Scottish, Manchin, Mark Cross, Janie Short, Dick Kids, Brad Pease, Paul Kuja, Jack Godfrey, Will, Claire, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Phil Thompson, Laurie, and Fismood, Gravit, Gordon Local 4.
Because guess the boys are back in town because we're all back.
I got it.
All right.
If any listeners are still knocking about, I guess probably because you're driving and haven't been able to, you know, you've queued up a bunch of podcasts and you haven't been able to reach round and quickly. Excuse me. I would highly, highly recommend, if you haven't read it already, searching out the article on Vice about the guy who went to a bar in Brooklyn and just played The Boys Are Back in Town on the jukebox until he got kicked out.
Amazing.
Like, every time the song finished, he went back over and put it on again. And people started looking at him being like, are you putting that on again? And he went, no. And then would put it on again. And eventually he gets kicked out. It's honestly, it's one of the funniest pieces of journalism. It's not really journalism, is it? It's a geezer writing about the fact that he got kicked out of a pub.
Yeah.
It's incredible. So yeah, I'd recommend reading that.
One of the podcasts I listened to, they were talking about what they do every Halloween, and one of the fellas on it said, yeah, this is not something we do every Halloween, but last Halloween what I did was I went into the center of San Francisco, I went to the jukebox, and I put like the Jurassic Park theme tune on 12 times in a row, and then left and went and did it in another pub, and then went and did it in another pub, and went and did it in another pub. So basically all of the bars in the center of San Francisco on Halloween. And then he went around in a loop and like went back to the same one again. So they just all had the Jurassic Park theme tune on.
That's incredible.
Just all night, basically, in every bar in San Francisco. Fantastic. If you want to get involved in anything we do Guitar Nerds wise, the best way to do that is go to the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds Forum, where you can chat to other Guitar Nerds listeners or, you know, catch up with what we're doing or submit questions for the podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds, or go to YouTube, youtube.com/Guitar Nerds videos. With that, we're going to head over and do the Patreon episode, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, gang.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.